Welcome inside the Coach's Room. Every week, we talk to elite coaches and backroom staff about their experiences, how they develop, and how they develop their players.
If you're not curious about these things, you go into assumptions, then you stop asking questions. Making assumptions stops any form of communication. And that's what happens, I think, when we form ideas and views on other people, the outside world, other cultures. We just assume things.
In this episode, we talk to Alison Anon. Alison is arguably one of the best hockey coaches of the last 10 years. During her 7 years as a head coach of the national women's team of the Netherlands, she won 10 trophies, including an Olympic gold medal. And also as a player, she was one of the best of her time. We had a very interesting, open, and mainly honest conversation about coaching and about her experiences so far. So enjoy this episode with Alison Anon. Because you started the column like a couple months ago or a half year ago or something?
I think I started it in...
You like writing?
First one was in January.
January.
Yeah. I actually enjoy it. It gets me thinking, makes me think.
Okay.
I think a lot and then forget to write it down, and now I write it down, which is good.
Yeah. And you're writing it down for everybody to read?
Yeah, that makes it a little different. Some things you know, you don't write everything down, but certainly there's things that, I mean, yeah, that you want to share and you want to, and these, I've got been given this opportunity to write this column, and I just really enjoy it, and yeah. I enjoy getting the feedback, hearing what other people's opinions, which makes me think even more or gives me some ideas of how you can improve, how you can a different perspective on things.
Yeah. It just to create some context for everybody that's listening already. We're not live, by the way, but it's a global hockey platform, right? Or a global hockey website or something?
Yeah, it's called the Hockey Paper.
Oh, the Hockey Paper, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
And it's an English website. And I think it's read worldwide, but I'm not really quite sure.
Don't know how much people... actually read it.
No, I don't. I have a good relationship with the editor and the owner of the Hockey Paper, and he asked me to, I didn't know him previously, but he asked me then to write, he's the one that kind of tells me if it's a good article or not, or, rewrite that one because that's not interesting enough, or. Did you think about this to add this in or that? Which is, it's quite good.
Cool. And you were looking at the five characteristics of a good coach.
Yeah. So I had listens, knowledgeable, simplest, winner, and respectful.
Okay.
Those are a lot of the things that I, inspiring, hard worker. I had 8 different things. And inquisitive.
What does it mean, inquisitive?
It means that you're curious, inquisitive.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Something that, there's in the past, kids are very curious, they're very inquisitive. And somewhere along the line we get told curiosity kills the cat. And we stop being curious, which means we stop asking questions.
Yeah.
And questions then become... maybe intimidating, because we don't know the answers to everything.
Sure.
Which is life. And I think that, one of the things that I really enjoy is being around people who are very curious and inquisitive, and not because they want to use it against you or just to grow and to learn and to, to become curious about the other person. It's just such a good way to learn about people, is to be curious.
Yeah.
it's always absolutely dependent on how the other person approaches it and sees it. But you know, a curious coach, an inquisitive coach, is someone who's always looking to learn new things, reasons behind things, searching for new ways, new ideas.
Not only, let's say, people, or not only, let's say, training wise or method wise, but mainly people wise.
Both.
Or both.
I mean, in all aspects. You know, it's curiosity is really asking questions, and if you've got a small child, they're always asking why. You know, why? That's curiosity. And at one point somewhere along the line, we say stop asking why and just do it. And I just don't agree with that in all of the time. Sometimes it's necessary, but yeah, curiosity is something that I think is essential in life.
Yeah, and it's an important characteristic of coach. Did you, throughout your years of coaching, stayed curious?
Yeah, I did, and you know, inquisitive, curious.
Inquisitive, yeah.
Inquisitive and curious is pretty much the same, I guess. Yes, I did. And it also links and it connects. It's something that I really enjoy doing, enjoy being.
I can imagine it's a very nice trait when you go to a completely new culture that you are in now. So there's lots to discover you recently, June, I think, you signed with China.
Yeah.
The women's team. So there's a lot to discover there.
It's absolutely. And it's not always easy for my translator because he's, sure. I'm asking.
Because you ask a lot of questions.
and there's, sometimes there's questions, the why you just don't have, you can't ask anymore because there's no reason behind it.
Okay.
Why do I have to fill in the same form,
asking the same question
for, don't ask why, don't ask anymore, just do it. And those are the things that you just do. But certainly, asking a lot of questions, being curious about their culture, people, how they work, and I think it's not such a nice way to explain the players that I'm coaching, but it is a different culture, but it's a very, I'm learning that it's a very pure culture.
Okay.
And being curious about that is really exciting.
What do you mean with pure culture?
I don't feel like there's anything behind the...
Ah, okay, yeah.
There's no... It's just pure. What you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And... there's no talking behind each other's backs about each other. They're curious. If they don't understand, they say, we don't understand. That's exciting. We don't always communicate the way and clearly or clear enough. It's life. You don't always get it right. But I know when they don't understand because they say.
Okay. Which could, but that's a fully an assumption from me that in a lot of, let's say, Asian cultures, they nod yes, but in fact you don't know if they really understand, but you don't experience it that way.
Oh, that happens. But if you're curious and you
then
see,
it's
all about also observing them, observing people. You often can see if someone doesn't understand it, and it's about giving them space to be able to say, I don't understand. And then taking the time after, or if the moment doesn't allow it, taking time later to explain it.
Yeah.
And we've built up a relationship now with the players that they're not afraid, not weary of saying, I don't understand, I need an explanation. And it can mean that it's lost in translation.
Sure.
Because, there is a translator in between. So my level of communication has be- become even more simpler than it was, because I have to make sure that my translator understands it so he can translate it further. So there's a double translation. It can't get lost somewhere in between. And that's really important.
Yeah. We had a coach from Norwich City, Championship Football Club. They signed a couple foreign players. I don't know the language. From the top of my head, was either Portuguese or Spanish or whatever, but he wasn't able to speak that language. And the players didn't understand English enough or good enough. So they had a translator as well. And he said it made him aware of what he was saying, and it simplified his coaching. It made his coaching much better, much shorter, much more concrete. Do you recognize that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Dutch wasn't my first language either.
Sure, yeah. So although you almost have a Dutch accent in your English now.
Almost, yeah. I mean, look, so for me it's, and I'm, yeah, it's always been a double translation.
Sure.
Since I've been coaching. And so you're always aware of how to say things clear enough. That can sometimes come over really hard because you're not using a lot of words.
Sure.
Which is, you know, there's a you've got to try and find some sort of balance, but it's really difficult. It's not easy. And, you know, I guess the good thing is in some countries they speak also English, and English is my first language.
Yeah.
In China they don't speak English, not many of them. We've now started, since I've been, started doing weekly English lessons where I'll teach them English and I'll also learn Chinese, which is really good. You know, and but there'll always be that gap, that language gap and language barrier. That's why it's important to have the translator, but also keep it simple. Don't use too many words. Don't use slang.
Sure.
You can get caught up in your own language using slang, and you know, that's where it goes wrong.
Even without speaking a different language, it is already hard to speak the same language and to have the same narrative with words or the same meaning with words if you never talk about what the meaning of the words is.
Absolutely. And also the emotion of a word. You can, sure, say one, yeah, word three different ways with three different tones, and it will mean something different. So, I mean, even the tone of what you say is important.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. I'm trying to imagine a pitch and then you want to say something. In the first months, maybe your natural instinct is just to step in and start screaming or start coaching, whatever. But now you have to go, okay, I don't know his name.
Oh, no. From the beginning, I actually didn't coach the players for the first month.
Okay.
I spent the first month getting to know the players, getting to know the culture, getting to know how they react to feedback, watching. So the other, that we had to, I have a Chinese staff as well, and they, yeah, were coaching. And so it was, you know, and we have double meetings. So we have a first meeting with the coaching staff and then the meeting with the players. So we're doubling up with communication. But I didn't coach any games in the first, I think it was the first 6 weeks.
Okay. Is it easy for you, or is it that, are you holding your tongue and, or is it?
Well, I feedback to the coach,
yeah,
but I didn't speak to the players directly during games, because I just felt like you have to have some sort of feeling about the players. You have to know how they play. You have to know how the system works. You have to have a little bit of an understanding about the culture, what to say, how to say it, when to say it, and that takes time.
Sure.
And, you know, when I was talking to my boss, they wanted me to coach the next day that I arrived.
Yeah.
And when explaining this, we, you know, kind of agreed that this was probably the best way to go about it.
Yeah, because you said you signed first for 6 months, which is a relatively short time. Mm-hmm. I can imagine if you are, let's say, the board, okay, we want results, or we want to see some difference or see some change very quick. But then, yeah, you made the decision on, first I'll I don't know if you put a timing on it, but first I take the time to watch, to observe, and then probably once I think I know enough, I can step in and be more in more
active. Yeah, exactly. And it's also about them getting to know me as a coach as well. So it's two-sided. And I think when you look at the past coaches, foreign coaches that have been there who dove in and started straight away, I'm not sure that it necessarily worked. And we discussed that as well. You know, what's the best way to get this right? You only get one chance to start once.
Yeah.
And I wasn't keen to dive in and make mistakes that had been made earlier and previously. And
did you speak with people that had the job before, or people that were – okay, so you had an outside impression from how it was.
Yeah. So I did a bit of homework before I took the job and spoke with two coaches that had been there and a number of other people that had worked in and around China. And Bettina Friesendorp I spoke with before I went to China, which was really good to hear about the culture that she was – I mean, she went there as a young
– Yeah, table tennis player.
And
she still plays. Or she plays again or something, right? The top level still is unbelievable.
No, I'm not sure she still plays, but I know that she's still coaching.
Oh, and, or something like that, yeah.
And just to gain some knowledge. And but once you're in there, it's different. You know, once you experience it yourself, it is different to what you get told.
Okay, what was the biggest, I don't know if it's a shock, but what was the biggest thing that you encountered in the beginning?
That you miss the social contact
because
you can't just sit down with a player at the dinner table and talk.
Because of the language barrier.
You always need a translator. Fortunately now that's getting better. I was able to, even last week, speak with a player online, one-on-one, without a translator.
Because they speak English, or because you learn more words in Chinese?
They were speaking more English. Okay. Chinese is, you know, it's when I'm there, it's like I can say some things.
Sure.
But, you know, it's all the tones, and if you get one tone wrong, you could be calling your mother a cow or something like that, you know. it's a fascinating language. But, you know, the fact that she was able to communicate with me in English. I just found it was extraordinary.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've made a goal with the team that, you know, all of them can speak English prior to going to Australia this year in January. Just the basic stuff.
Sure.
And, you know, all of them can.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. It feels like almost feels like a relief or something, that the practical boundary is gone if you can communicate easier.
It is. It is. And then, you know, that she was willing to, because it was actually, we're talking about something about an analysis system that I've introduced into the team, and she needed some assistance on the program.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an easy subject either. And
it was probably self-improvement, things she can improve, blah, blah, something.
No, it was how to use the system.
Oh, okay, you know, okay.
Technical,
okay.
IT stuff.
Sure.
And she just started talking to me in English, and I was astounded. And she was confident about it. And if, you know, you ask me what was one of the things, you know, the social aspect of not being able to talk to them, but you know, the second thing that astounded me the most is the lack of confidence that they have. And, you know, last week I was online talking to a player who was talking back in English with confidence, and that's really exciting.
Yeah. And talking back, not only talking back, but also maybe pushing back a little.
What do you mean by
pushing back? Well, you can talk back, like I talk back now, or I can give you, let's say, pushback on your feedback, or that I see something different. Let's say that's more that my insights are different, or that I think different about.
Yeah, I had that with another player. This player was really IT technical. How do I do this with this system? The week before, I had a player who was sending. You know, we send each other footage, and you know, a player that sent me footage and said, oh, you know, I think that we, you know, in this case, we should be doing this, and it's really the way that we want them to be doing. I want the players to be owning, taking responsibility of their own game and the game that we play. which is something that they haven't done in the past. It's been very, you know, regime. This is how we play. This is what we do. And now we're creating a little bit of chaos in them and for them to expand their ideas and about the game and allowing them to do the homework. So, you know, I've got the team having their own weekly meetings, pulling out footage from games, showing it to each other. And so, yeah, in that way they're pushing back, yeah.
Yeah, so that's finally, well, not finally, you see the results of, yeah, the I don't know what's the right word. It's not culture. It's a thinking process of the player themselves, that they are involved and that they are willing and that they are confident enough. Oh, but I have a different view, it's also not maturing. It's switching mentality or something, or mindset.
I think it's definitely got a little bit to do with becoming a complete elite athlete.
Yeah, that's a better word.
You know, a lot of these players never owned a computer.
Okay.
And, you know, now I think 5 or 6 players have bought their own computer for the first time in their life, you know, 26, 27, to be able to learn to analyze, to grow, to have something after they've stopped playing. And, you know, that's also very exciting for them.
Yeah.
And part of pushing back, as you call it, is creating something new. And that's what's exciting about this challenge with China, is that it's not just about hockey. It's about, you know, changing or creating an environment where they can explore,
yeah,
increase their curiosity.
Great. I completely went into, how do you say it, economically strong Western mentality or thoughts there, because you said, right, it's not only the thought process or hierarchy or whatever that they create a new way of thinking, of new way of working, but I assumed that everybody has a computer, which is completely normal for us, but there apparently it isn't.
No.
So it's not only playing style, but it's also everything around it is coming at you.
Yeah, I mean, look, learning a language, learning how to use a computer, learning how to present, they're all things that are probably for us very normal.
Yeah.
But not so normal for, you know, people worldwide.
Yeah.
And that's also, if you're not curious about these things, you go into assumptions, then you stop asking questions. And, you know, making assumptions stops any form of communication. And that's what happens, I think, when we form ideas and views on other people, the outside world, other cultures. We just assume things. And, yeah, that's, you know, the assumption. I probably went in with the same assumption. You know, I went in assuming that the coaching staff all would have their own computer.
Yeah.
Because that's what we have. It's normal.
Yeah.
But it's not normal. So stop using normal as a form of communication and, you know, be curious. What do you have? How do you use it? How do you analyze games? You know, it's all new.
Yeah. I want to go to something else that's normal for you. Maybe we'll go back to your coach's room or facilities later, but I told you before we started, I was writing down your resume. I stopped because it would have filled the page. And the amount of trophies is unbelievable. If I have correct, you won something every year you either played or coached, whether it was an individual trophy, team trophy, or some award of coaching of the year. I'm in your office now. I don't see any trophies here. But you do have a lot of them. So you could say, if we're doing assumptions anyway, you could say that winning is normal for you and that winning is maybe the norm. What does winning mean to you?
Well, I don't like losing. But I've also been very fortunate in my career.
Sorry, don't interrupt. If you're listening to this, please go to Wikipedia or your website. Just to get some reference on what you have won, because yeah, like I said, it couldn't fit one page. Just stop listening for a while and just look. And then you have some reference or who we are talking to. But go on, sorry.
I'm being very fortunate, and I've been fortunate to be part of some very great teams, some very good teams, to have played with some fantastic players, and have had the opportunity to coach, you know, the best team in the world.
Coaches, sorry for the interruption. Besides the coaches room, I run another company called Football Tours. This is a full service touring company, and we organize pre-season and winter training camps for professional football teams. We do this for both senior and youth teams, and we take care of everything. Hotel, training accommodation, friendly matches, whatever you need. We give youth teams the opportunity to train at the best youth academies of the Netherlands. Academies like PSV, Feyenoord, AZ Alkmaar and the KNVB, you can train there with your team. So, if you are a professional coach, you need to organize your training camp, or if you have a youth team and you want to train at the best facilities in the best academies of the Netherlands, go to footballtours.com. And now pay attention, tours is with a Z. So footballtours.com.
At one point that you went from a player to being a coach, but during your, I think it was during your playing career or right after, somebody wrote a book about you. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to go in on the story about how you became a competitive player and how you became as good as you were, because we're just not, we don't have enough time, which, because I promised to let you go in 20 minutes. But your playing career, based on the discussion that nobody heard, gave you, let's say, a mindset of pushing yourself beyond your own limits, being successful with that, which you did say was not a goal on itself, it was more an outcome. But then at one point you decide to be a coach. You also explained why, because you wanted to give something back to hockey, I think, because a lot of people invest in you, and it was your turn to invest in hockey. The summary version is actually, yeah. It all comes back.
Yeah.
But then at one point you're on the pitch with that backpack full of pushing yourself, and then you're in front of a group of players. Sure, they want to get better. They are motivated that because you, they want to be better as well. But that's an interesting step. Can you please go back to that, to that point?
What I said is that, you know, one of the biggest mistakes that I made as a player going into coaching is that I was coaching as a player and expecting and assuming that the players understood things, and, you know, even the younger players, should understand the game, should understand what I'm saying, that I didn't have enough baggage as a coach to provide them with enough tools to be the best that they could be. You know, I just expected it. And
I listened to another podcast with you, and you were giving an example. Okay, I was telling them this is when we should press, or this is the most evolved way of pressing, without even explaining them what a press was, for example.
That's an example. Assuming that they knew, because, you know, I was coaching as a player. I knew it, so they should know it. Yeah. And, you know, and back then there weren't many coaching courses. You know, nowadays there's a lot of coaching courses. A lot of the coaching courses are based on the tactical and technical side of the game, but not so much on the soft skills. And, you know, I guess over the years I took some time away from coaching to learn the soft skills. I'd never worked in an organization. I'd worked in, as a player, I had various jobs because I had to work to earn money.
Sure.
You know, and but never in an organization. And so I took some time away from coaching to learn those soft skills. I worked at Den Haag Topsport as manager there, Johan Cruyff Institute, where I was manager there, and, you know, I learned a lot. And I didn't always get it right. As, you know, coaching, you also don't always get it right. You know, you do get things wrong. It's about learning and growing. And, you know, over the years I learned that I had to explain things differently. I was in a different culture. You know, in Australia you do what the coach says. In Holland it's very yama, yes, but.
You know, or why.
Yeah, I'm not so difficult with the why, but, you know, it's the yes, but. Seems like there's an endless conversations. So either I'm not explaining it well enough, or, you know, you've always got room to discuss things, of course. You know, the players are the players that are playing the game. There comes a time when you just have to play the game. And, you know, I really found that my cultural background in Australia of having that conversation with, you know, an input about how to play was evident. It was always present. At one point in time, we just played and we trusted the views of the coach, and the coach decided which way we would go. And we were very successful in that. So I never quite in the beginning, you know, not even till the end, I think, didn't quite understand why there was always so much doubt and, you know, the need to have to say something to, you know, I've never had the need or desire to have to say something, to want to be heard. You know, if there were senior players who had more experience, I was happy to take a back seat and learn from them. My time will come if I need it or I want it. And, you know, those are the things that I am still learning today.
Yeah. Okay. I understand. Yeah. For the people that don't live in the Netherlands, in football is extremely the same. It's always why, or we know better, or there's, I don't know if it's definitely a cultural thing. It's not, I don't know if it's resistance, but you can perceive it that way. But Dutch players, if you say, okay, run 10 laps, and then why? And any other, well, not any, but a lot of other cultures, they do just do 12. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and it's difficult to understand, explain, because it's healthy to want to understand why, because you're having to do it. I don't think that the same resistance is there with a lot of other areas of life. You know, why do you have to stop at a red light?
Yeah.
We all do it. There's some things that I just think, you know, how important is it to have so much discussion about this right now at this moment? And, you know, I've learned, you know, become very patient and, you know, trying to listen and take on all of the input. At one stage, it can be too much.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting the balance right is something that I still don't get right today, because you want everyone to be heard. You know, I've become out of the Dutch culture of, you know, everyone has to be heard, everyone wants to be heard, and then you're listening to everyone, and then it's so much information. You know, at one point, you know, just make a decision. So you've been asked to make a decision, but then also everyone wants to be heard. So it's, you know, it's a difficult balance.
Yeah, in the Netherlands, then we make a decision that kind of fits nobody and kind of fits everybody. That's completely,
yeah.
It's very complicated and it's very annoying, because you can never do it right. And we, and then I take all the Dutchmen as people at the same time, but we're not very good at choosing. It's either this or that, or following, which is also hard. And the advantage is that you have players that think for themselves, that are creative, that take risks. And the downside is that you constantly have to explain or, how you say it? Yeah, I'm looking for verantwoorden is the Dutch word, but you have to explain why you are doing things, blah, blah, okay. Mm-hmm. Different discussion. So it has advantages, and it's interesting because with China, you're kind of looking for that trait.
Oh, look, I think that the players have to have full autonomy when they're on the field. We cannot be as coaches telling them how to do things and when to do it and where to do it. We give them boundaries. We give them a set of guidelines, and you know they play. We call it principles. You know, you get a set of principles. You go into the field, and the principles is what keeps what glues the team together. You know, if everyone plays to the principles, but has their own freedom to be creative and do what they're good at, then I think you've got the best balance.
Yeah.
It's when players move outside of that and you get a sort of movement that doesn't match with the way that we want to play or the way you want to do things, then there becomes a new discussion, and that discussion can take time.
Yeah.
And
that's the point also where, as a coach, you have to set your boundaries. Either you do accept it, which can lead to more chaos, or sometimes you accept it because you think these are mature players or they are so experienced, I can let the process go fully. But at some point, you also have to say, okay, sorry, guys, but this is now my rule, or this is the way I want to see it, and either follow or go.
Yeah. And that's why you're there as a coach, to make those decisions. And you know, and that's not easy being a coach. You have to, depending on the size of your squad, you have to make, I had 28 players. I have now 28 with China. You know, how do you keep 28 people happy? You can't. It's not possible. You are always going to do something that some players don't want to do. You are always going to say something that some players don't like. It's not easy.
For me, if I look at that process at the beginning, when I just started coaching a senior team, men that were older than me or just as old as me, my natural instinct was, okay, I need to connect with all the players. Because that's what humans do. I want to be liked, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. We know the whole psychology.
Yeah.
And later on I discovered, okay, this is not the way it works. You either connect or you don't. It doesn't matter as long as you're, I was honest. So I think that's, but then, a lot of times, if you connect with a few of them, they either comply or they understand or whatever. But you are the leader, you take the decisions, which means literally you're the only one in that spot, which means almost literally that the process is lonely. How do you perceive that?
Oh, a head coach is a lonely position. You've got a staff that you've got to manage, you've got players that you've got to manage, you've got a system, a company that you work for, which has their own system. You are part of another system when a national body. In Holland, you've also got the clubs that you have to, be connected with that aren't always in agreement. More often than not, aren't in agreement with what you do. So there's it's not easy holding, juggling all these things. It's very difficult, which makes your job as a coach extremely lonely. And you know that when you go into it, but once you're there, then you realize just how lonely it is. You have to make that one sole decision. And as a coach, players aren't inclined to go and speak to the coach because the coach makes the decisions. And that's a realization. I knew that. I knew that was something that is a barrier for players, because the coach makes the final decision. Whether you're in the team or not, whether you're good enough or not, even though it's a collective decision within the staff, the coach is seen to be made the final decision. So that creates a barrier and a boundary for a lot of things that you don't want there. You know, that's difficult.
Yeah. I fully agree. I found that one of the hardest things while coaching. And
particularly because you want exactly the opposite. You don't want the boundary to be there. And it's very difficult to say to someone, my door is always open. You can always come in. Please come and talk. And they don't, because there's just their barrier. And it doesn't matter which coach it is.
Yeah. What I think is the hardest part is that I went from an assistant coach to being the head coach, which means the assistant coach is the safest role you can have. Everybody likes you. It's the easiest job there is. And they enjoyed my role there. I said, well, we want you to be the head coach. And at the club we were, I connected very good with all the players during that, let's say, first 2 years as an assistant coach. You had a beer after the game, or they could talk to me with anything. And then at one point, okay, now I have to make a choice between two players. And at both of them, I enjoyed whatever it was outside of the pitch. But now I have to go to you. And I'm going to tell you that I'm going to make this decision. I never didn't make the decision, but it always hurts a little. Well, that's at least how I perceived it. You recognize that?
Absolutely. And, you know, I didn't have the being an assistant, because that puts you in a totally different position. You know, I don't believe that a coach, at least a head coach, can be a friend of a player for these reasons. There has to be some sort of distance, and really difficult, because you, like you said, you connect with some players, you may connect less with other players, but that doesn't influence your decision at all, because you always want the best players in your team to win matches. It's not an easy position to be in, and making those decisions and communicating those decisions is awful. And any coach that says that they take pleasure in announcing a team and disappointing players is one of the most awful things I've ever had to do, to call a player and take away their Olympic dream. It's awful.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think people always realize that it hurts you as a coach as well. People think, oh, it doesn't affect you, you're the boss, you take the choices. But you know already 2 hours before the decision, you start already feeling it. It's always there.
I felt sick when I had to call players to tell them that they weren't selected. You know, I had tears rolling down my eyes, hearing the pain and anguish of the player on the other side of the, you know, on the other, just terrible.
Yeah, I recognize that.
It's
not an Olympic level. Like you said, your norm is different, but in that case, but still the feeling is always there.
It will be the same. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't matter in which level, disappointing someone, in theory, you're telling them they're not good enough. Because that's, in theory, that's what it is. Awful.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I don't want to drag you down much further, but we had one question that we discussed. But the most important is maybe the question after. To discuss the elephant in the room, which is by the way not here between us, but people, what happened when you left the Dutch team? We're not going to discuss that. But I was going to ask you, okay, what's your darkest hour as a coach? And then the main thing there is, what have you learned from it? So what was a moment, what was something that happened, and what did you took from it, and what's the lesson there?
Yeah, I knew the question was coming because you sent it on the email. It's a difficult question to answer because I've had quite a few the last year.
Sure.
I guess the darkest hour was when you get told in a very, not even a very clear way, that some players are afraid of you and you've never felt that, experienced that. It's completely opposite to your inner feeling. It's almost you just totally, you don't understand it. And still not having any explanation. Still not knowing.
So left in the unknown in this case.
To the day.
It's still related to what happened in January. Like I said, no details there. But the feeling that you got from it is maybe the hardest part. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Not knowing. You know, and what I've learned from it is to listen to myself more, take care of myself. You know, through the whole corona period, I put my players and the players that I was coaching at number one and my family at number two, and I kind of let myself go. And I didn't listen to myself. I didn't listen to how tired I was. You know, everything else and everyone else was more important. And after the Olympics, I probably should have stopped coaching because I was tired. There were a lot of signals, which I've learned in the last year, that I had that, you know, I was probably close to, no, not a breakdown, but a
burnout almost sounds
definitely
like
a burnout. Yeah. And, you know, I've learnt in the past year through coaching.
Somebody coaching you? Is that what you're saying? Or coaching in general?
I was totally annihilated. And, you know, I've been going to coaching, I've been coached. To learn to listen to myself, to put myself first, to, you know, not take everything personally. As I've read a number of books that have become almost a Bible for me, where I've learned a lot about myself. And, you know, you can doubt yourself. You can go into doubt about what you've done and how you did it, because at the time, in the years, it seemed okay.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I've learned the last year to not take everything personally, but to take it as an experience, as a life experience, and, you know, stay curious, because that definitely the curiosity did kill the cat. I stopped being curious for a period of time in the last year. And, you know, I stopped learning, I really closed down. And that's probably the darkest hour of the darkest time that I've had for home as well. You know, it wasn't easy for my family at home at all.
Yeah. Okay. It's impressive to hear this, to be fair. Mm. And I think as a coach, this is a danger of the job. Because it doesn't even matter which level, you can be so caught up in what you're doing, and you can be, you want to be the best in every part of coaching, which there are a lot of areas, and then you're managing, let's say, 50 people, which means you think you are responsible for 50 people as well, emotionally, whatever. And then you're on the bottom of those 50.
Yeah.
And that's where it goes wrong. Well, where it goes wrong, it's almost a pitfall of coaching. There's always something to do.
There is always something to do. And, you know, the Olympics were postponed for a year. It wasn't fun for 2 years during Corona. Not at all. There was no part of what we did was fun. So it doesn't surprise me if players are saying, you know, it wasn't fun. We didn't have fun. We had rules. We had, you know, it was very strict, and it wasn't even from our own team that we were given the rules. It was from the government. It was from, you know, the hockey association. It was from NSNSF. We had so many guidelines that we had to follow that it wasn't fun. It was difficult. It wasn't easy. And I don't hear too many people talking about how difficult it was.
No, and I don't, and this is again my idea on your story, as the top team, literally the best team in the world, you also need to follow the rules, the best in the world, because everybody's looking at you maybe.
Oh, and you know, the biggest, I think one of the biggest lessons that I learned then is, you know, I was having to also, hunt here, the rules.
Maintain the rules,
you know. Because I was the only one I had one full-time staff member. So it was me and one other person.
Yeah.
And that's difficult to maintain the rules. You know, if people are, we're not allowed to go out to dinner. It's not my rule. That's the rule of the government. That's, you're only allowed two people in your home. Yeah. That's not my rule. That's the rule of the government. If you break those rules, and you come to training and you've got corona,
it's going to interfere everything. So it was up to you to manage that process constantly.
Yeah. And so you're the boo man. You're the person that they'll turn to and they will dislike. I should have had someone else do it.
Yeah. It's almost like there's another layer on top of you as a head coach, because normally you make a tactical or whatever decision that enhance the process of performance. Performance is better. And now you had this set of rules, another set of rules that you're also was waving with.
Yeah, and from the clubs, and it was coming. Then the rules were changing. You know, I fought for 2 years to have 18 players be able to play at the Olympic Games instead of 16 and two reserves. I said, just let us play with 18. You know, and I was writing letters to FIH, and you know, I was communicating with them, and wasn't allowed. And then 2 weeks before the Olympics, they said, we're allowed to do it. Now that would change your process and the way of selecting players enormously.
Yeah.
And this, you know, the rules were changing. I was writing a new program every 2 weeks because the rules were changing. And then that had to go to the clubs, and the clubs had to then, you know, accept the program. And if they didn't accept the program, and then we weren't allowed, you know, there were so many things we weren't allowed to do. And I was the one that was having to say we weren't allowed to do it.
Yeah.
So I was covering for other people instead of just saying, look, you know, it's their decision.
Yeah.
I've learned from that.
I can imagine, again, that if the way that I got to know you now, that this is you deal with things in great intensity. So if there's a lot of things to change, you want to do everything the best you can with the best intentions. And then if things come back to you, you also take it, the feedback or criticism, with the same intention, which can fill you up.
Oh, I took a lot personally in the years of the, particularly in the corona years, I was taking a lot of things personally, and that broke me as well. I had no control, and that's difficult. Because you need to be in control, but you have very little control. And that's, you know, that's something that I've worked on the last year. You know, what does that mean? How much control do you have? What do you, you know, and particularly don't take things personally.
Yeah.
Biggest lesson the last year.
I think it's the most valuable lesson you can have.
Fantastic book, by the way. The Four Agreements.
Okay. The four, what did you say?
The four agreements.
Okay. Yeah. We'll put it online.
Yeah.
Okay. As well, I have to be fair. Which leads us to the last question, because like I said, you have 15 minutes to be at home. Mm-hmm. We can do it short.
Okay.
Who should we talk to next?
Pep Guardiola.
Wow. Can you help us connect him with?
I don't know. That or Richard Charlesworth, and I can connect you with Richard Charlesworth?
Yeah. Okay.
He was my previous coach. He's now my assistant at China.
I read that, yeah.
Yeah. Doctor, coach, politician, four-time Olympian, incredibly intelligent man.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Pep Guardiola was already on, let's say, our wish list.
Mm.
But now you've added somebody that could be even more concrete and you probably or hopefully help us talk to him. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you for listening to this episode of Inside the Coach's Room. Make sure to subscribe or rate us in your favorite podcast player or share this episode on your social media and we will make sure that you will get access to the best webinar that's available on our website. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I would be happy to connect.